Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, August 4th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. The Constitutional Court throws out an appeal by two former Zuba petroleum managers giving companies the green light to continue firing workers on 3 months' notice.
These workers, they are in a tight situation, and some of them, they don't have anywhere to go because they were born here and bred here.
Three Zimbabweans are among 40 of the Mandela Washington Fellows who were awarded $25,000 entrepreneurship grants by the U.S. African Development Foundation to start or expand their social enterprises in their home countries.
For me, it's a dream come true. As a young person coming from Zimbabwe, yes, there are a lot of challenges that we go through, but I believe we're resilient people and we can overcome and achieve.
And the Wange Magistrates Court postpones the start of a trial for a hunter who helped an American dentist hunt and kill Cecil the Lion last month. These stories and much, much more coming up. Workers' hopes that they would get a reprieve from the Constitutional Court barring employers from continuing to fire employees on notice were dashed today when the court ruled the case by two Zuba petroleum managers against the termination of employment on notice was a nullity. Justice Venanda Ziyambi ruled the two, represented by Professor Maduku, had no legal right of appeal. The judge ruled as the ZANU-PF Politburo, the party's senior decision-making body, was meeting in the capital to discuss the job losses, which have increased to over 18,000 since the Supreme Court ruling some weeks ago. At least 45 companies have used the ruling to fire employees on notice. Justice Ziyambi said no constitutional issues were raised by the two managers in their appeal, adding an appeal can only be noted at the Constitutional Court when the Supreme Court is alleged to have erred in determining some constitutional issues raised before it. Meanwhile, more than 100 families were yesterday thrown out of their homes at Muriel Farm in Mutorashanga after the company took advantage of the Supreme Court ruling to fire workers. Affected workers told Studio 7 they were not given their 3 months' salaries upon being fired. Most of them are living in the open. Farmer Tarupira Matiza is one of the farmers in Mutorashanga, who has jumped to help the stranded farmers. We spoke with him earlier on.
Yeah, these workers, they are in a tight situation, and some of them, they don't have anywhere to go because they were born here and bred here. So like now, they have to know. So we farmers are trying to assist them. And some of the people in the community are assisting them because they are nowhere.
Do you think this company just took advantage of the Supreme Court ruling allowing employers to terminate their employees' contracts at will? Why do you think, you know, this is happening now?
Yeah, I think they are taking that advantage because currently the state of the economy is in bad shape. So everyone is taking an advantage because there is no control. There's not that control in that street, which is which will at the end of the day affect the workers there by the end of the day. They were the police station reporting their cases and the police, and they were informed to go to the court and report their case.
In terms of how they were removed or evicted from those houses, Mr. Matiza, would you say it was done, you know, humanely enough, considering some of these people were born there and they don't know any other home except the homes at Muriel Farm?
It was done in a barbaric way, and they just wanted them out of those houses. And most of those houses, the people who were using the houses are the ones who renovated the homes. And the mine is, there are very people who called those people to come in. Guys, they renovated those houses. 80% of the houses, the tenants renovated those homes.
That was Farmer Tarupira Matiza speaking to Studio 7's Sandra Nyaira from Mutura Shanga. Three Zimbabweans are among 40 of the Mandela Washington Fellows who were awarded $25,000 entrepreneurship grants by the U.S. Africa Development Foundation to start or expand their social enterprises in their home countries. Kudakwashe Makuzwa of Anaya Investments, Farai Chizengeni of Utano Tech, and Andrew Chikomba of Tomire Trading are the Zimbabweans who received the grant awards. According to USAIDF, $1 million in grant awards has been availed to the fellows as part of USAIDF's over $7 million commitment over 3 years to fund young African entrepreneurs who are launching and expanding their businesses and social ventures across sub-Saharan Africa. Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo managed to talk to many of the Yali fellows from Zimbabwe who expressed their excitement about their experience in America.
My name is Munyaradzi Dodo. I'm from Harare, Zimbabwe. I'm the co-founder of TV Young. The future of the continent belongs and depends on us, and we should take the initiative and be responsible enough to take up issues that matter. We're the generation we've been waiting for. We're the heroes we've been waiting for. So I think if not us, then who? If not now, then when?
I'm Suzule Nyamande. I work for Environment Africa as a team leader. I'm also the chairperson of the Better Schools program in Zimbabwe, Victoria Falls Cluster. And I'm also the deputy chairperson of the Wange District Education Stakeholder Steering Committee. For me, it's a dream come true. You grow up dreaming of being in America one day. You grow up dreaming of one day meeting one of the most powerful presidents. And then when you get to meet him, being in the same room, hearing him speak and the things that he believes in, which have also served to also inspire me. As a young person coming from Zimbabwe, yes, there are a lot of challenges that we go through, but I believe we are resilient people and we can overcome and achieve our dreams.
I'm Divine Dube. I work under the auspice of Plumbed Development Trust, which is a community-based organization working in the southern part of Zimbabwe. Plumbed Tree, Kubukalanga. Actually, I'm a new media specialist. Basically, this has been a great experience of learning, sharing ideas. What I've been looking for is how America uses our new media to upscale civic engagement. And the great opportunity of visiting Philadelphia Innovation Lab, where they use new media to upscale civic engagement.
That was Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo talking to a number of Yali fellows from Zimbabwe. Still continuing with the Mandela Washington Fellows, the fellows are wrapping up with many going back to their countries tomorrow. Zimbabwean businessman Augustine Mhlanga, who operates a moving company in Washington, D.C., last night hosted the Yali Fellows at a reception held in the U.S. Capitol, bringing the fellows and fellow Africans living in the district together. Speaking at the event, Mhlanga said it was important for Zimbabweans to give back to the community, hence his decision to sponsor the event. Meanwhile, fellows from Zimbabwe have come together with other sub-Saharan fellows to form a group called Yali Creatives, which will share ideas on how to change Africa's negative narrative. Zimbabwe's Kelvin Mutize yesterday held a discussion to chart the way forward for the group.
We're part of a group called Yali Creatives, which is a collaboration of fellows from 2014 and 2015 from sub-Saharan Africa who are into the creative space, whether they are artists, musicians, people in the media, people in the entertainment sector. So we're all coming together as a force to reckon with and then putting up all our resources, our knowledge, and our expertise. And then we're merging them together to sow back into the community to help other studios, people who are starting out, people who are growing, people who need help. So that's what we're doing, to and also collaborating amongst ourselves to also further our work. You know, you cannot only do, you know, collaboration is the best thing now. You cannot work as a silo. So Yali Creatives is just there to help bridge and help connect people from different countries to collaborate more and to tell the African story, because that's the biggest issue that we're looking for. How can we change the narrative that's coming out of Africa? What is Africa all about? We want to speak about the issues of Africa. We want to speak about Africa from our perspective.
But is it possible to change the narrative? Can you change the narrative as Yali Creative?
Fantastically, yes. I believe
how?
So. If you look at the American history, it's been built for a long time. It's been built over years systematically. They've actually put things into place to actually work on it. And I think that as Africa, as young people, all of us are between the ages of 25 and 35, we are systematically working together, collaborating on major productions, on major projects, so that we are actually starting to tell the story. We are not going to eat the whole elephant at once, but we're going to take one spoon at a time. It will take us some years, but we'll get there. We'll change the African narrative.
That there was Kelvin Mutize of Yali Creatives speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye in Washington, D.C. The Wangi Magistrates Court today agreed to push back the start of a trial for a hunter who helped an American kill a lion named Cecil last month. The trial was due to start today, but the lawyer representing Theo Bronkhorst asked the court for more time to prepare his defense and was granted a postponement until September 28th. Bronkhorst was a guide for Walter Palmer, a dentist from the U.S. state of Minnesota, who shot Cecil in what authorities say was an illegal hunt outside the Wange National Park. Both men have denied doing anything wrong. Zimbabwe is seeking the extradition of Palmer, who has not been seen in public since Cecil's killing became public. The black-maned lion was a known attraction at the park and wearing a tracking collar as part of an Oxford University study. Authorities say the hunters lured Cecil out of the park where it was illegal to hunt and killed him outside the park boundaries with a shot from a bow and arrow and later a gun. The killing has drawn international condemnation. Earlier this week, three major U.S. airlines, Delta Airlines, American Airlines, and United Airlines, responded by banning the shipment of hunting trophies following similar prohibitions put in place by Emirates and South African Airways. The ban prevents carrying lion, leopard, elephant, rhinoceros, and buffalo trophies. Meanwhile, Wange Rural District Council Chairwoman Spiwe Mafua of ZANU-PF tells reporter Thandekile Mhlanga that although the hunting and killing of the lion occurred outside the local authority's jurisdiction, the council ensures that general hunting rules are adhered to through its local campfire project.
It was in our neighboring authority, which was parked. We don't know what the other authorities think about the way they look after their own wildlife. In our authority, we could treat it in a manner that it deserves. If it was scaring it, we could scare it back. But we only have authority over our own jurisdiction as Wangi Rural District.
And talking about your authority, what role do you play when it comes to parks and wildlife?
It is a project is meant to conserve wildlife and also harvest and benefit financially from the wildlife that is within our jurisdiction. We also have animals that, like lions, that cause conflict between humans and wildlife. And if it is animals like elephants, it depends which, where and when and where are they at the time. We can think they are causing a conflict. Sometimes we relate very well. Sometimes they will pass us past, but if they then start attacking or eating our fields, then that to us is a problem.
Now, how is the conflict between villagers and animals? We heard previously that lions would attack villagers or elephants would trample on their crops.
This time of the year, we hardly kill elephants as a problem animal. But lions, yes, they do come because all year round we keep cattle. And sometimes they even get to an extent of killing people in some unfortunate incident. Even a week ago, a man was killed by an elephant, but I suppose it was a female elephant that before that lost its calf, or it was also like an angry elephant. Those are conflicts that we meet with every time in human and wildlife.
That was Wange Rural District Council Chairperson Sipiwe Mafua of ZANU-PF on the line with Studio 7's Thandekile Mhlanga from Wange.
Mama, call brother to tell papa who live in the jungle. Don't kill a lion, don't kill a lion, you don't.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metom Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, the Diaspora Forum with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. But first, a look at regional and international news. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has expressed his serious concern over allegations the United States spied on senior Japanese government and business officials. Prime Minister Abe also called for an investigation into the matter during a phone call with U.S. Vice President Joe Biden, according to Japan's top government spokesman Yoshihide Suga. U.S. President Barack Obama is calling for congressional approval of the international accord to restrain Iran's nuclear program, describing it as the most consequential foreign policy debate since the country's ill-fated 2002 decision to invade Iraq. And Cameroon says it has arrested suspected Boko Haram fighters who disguised themselves as refugees to attack a refugee camp on its northern border with Nigeria. The arrests follow an attack on two Cameroonian villages in which at least 9 people were killed, dozens of children kidnapped, and houses burned. And in our Diaspora Forum today, Zimbabwean agronomist Peter Mukudzavu, based in Maryland, USA, has continued with his interest in agriculture by engaging in a small-scale maize cropping project designed to supply corn to foreigners based here in the United States. Mukudzavu, who worked at Seedco Limited, a leading producer and marketer of certified crop seeds in southern Africa, says he's currently renting a plot from a Hagerstown farmer where he grows maize strains similar to some used by Zimbabwean farmers. He normally supplies maize in batches to individuals and African embassies in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Studio 7's Gibbs Dube caught up with Mukudzavu on his way home today after supplying some of his produce to several families in Maryland.
I enjoy farming. Got some piece of land from a farmer, a neighbor, and I grow maize every year and share that maize with my fellow Zimbabweans.
Now tell us a bit about that kind of project. When did you start it?
It's now 5 years now. I started small, just for me, for myself and my family and a few friends. I could not stomach the sweet corn that we buy here, that is sold in grocery stores. I needed something that I'd grown up eating. So I approached the farmer and got some bit of land and started growing the maize.
How lucrative is this business?
Not really. It's a lot of work, though, but I wouldn't say it's very lucrative. I think I'm just doing it more for, I like it. It's a hobby for me, and Zimbabwean, DC, want that type of corn.
Now, you know, when you have got a market like Zimbabwe's, that market appears to be a little bit restricted. Do you sell it to other people as well?
We're making inroads now. Over the years, we've really just kind of focused on Zimbabweans. We have not tried to bring Southern African citizens in. But yeah, that's another market that we need to develop. We just haven't done it. Yeah, this year we have sold a fair amount to different embassies from Southern Africa. So I think we can only grow. All we need really is just a network to those communities.
So are you actually growing some special kind of corn or maize?
Yes, it's probably special in the sense that farmers in this country call it field corn, we call it maize. We approached Pioneer Seeds. They've got a special type of corn that is similar to the one that we grow in Zimbabwe in terms of taste and sweetness. So in that sense, we can call it special.
What are your productivity levels like? You know, how much do you grow?
Small piece of land. I mean, that's 5 acres. I don't even grow the whole, harvest the whole 5 acres. Most of the time, I'll have the farmer just combine harvest when it dries off. But unfortunately, our environment, we have short windows for harvesting. It gets very hot this time of the year, and we probably have a 2-week window to harvest. At most, maybe 2.5 weeks to harvest before it dries off. So most of the time, really, I don't use all the 5 acres.
And now, do you employ any workers there, or you are the only one maybe with your family?
I'm the only one with the family. I mean, the farmer helps me with plowing, with applying herbicides, things like that. But otherwise, it's only me and my family. Occasionally, I'll get a few college boys to help me with harvesting. But most of the time, it's me and my family.
And can we safely say that you are actually depending on this corn for a livelihood?
No. No, that's why I said it's just a hobby. I mean, we do it to, we get income from it, 2 weeks in a year? You can't survive for that. It's just people are asking for it, and I'm supplying them. But no, it's not really that I make a living from it.
Any future plans to expand it?
I mean, if we can get enough clients, we can network to people from Africa. People from Africa, we eat corn, most of Africans. So we will see if we can network enough. Yeah, there are a lot of African immigrants in this region. So there is potential for a big market if only we can get our act together.
And then finally, are there any challenges that you are facing in terms of this kind of project?
Just the labor side. I mean, labor in America is expensive, and one planting is just not adequate. It just gives you 2 weeks of harvest. If we can space it so that every 2 weeks we make a planting, and that way we can extend the harvest period.
That was Zimbabwean agronomist Peter Mukudzavu speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Hagerstown right here in Maryland, USA. Worried by the proliferation of wild teenage parties popularly known as Vuzum parties, a coalition of churches and civic organizations says it's mobilizing residents and politicians in Bulawayo to march against the practice. In Harare, the parties are known as skin-out parties, in which the revelers are mostly teenage school kids who drink alcohol, take drugs, and engage in unprotected sex. The organizers of the march say they want to take their campaign against the parties to other cities as well. Reverend Usenis Banda, one of the organizers of the march, told Studio 7 that police have given them the go-ahead and they expect a big turnout because people are getting worried about the parties.
We have together churches, schools, ministries of education, youth, as well as Ministry for Women Affairs, to do a big campaign around the city, around that. And we have decided to do this to raise an awareness, so that people in the city and in the community, including the school children, will be aware that these Hutu parties are destroying their future. They are actually denying them the right to education. And as well as we realize that the issue of consent to sex, this whole debate, which allows young children to marry, we want to raise awareness that it's going to destroy the future of our children.
Is it a really big problem?
This problem has become cancerous because, as I speak now, just one school, one girls' school here in Bulawayo, is cancelling over 1,200 girls who have been involved in these Zuzu parties, as well as in drugs, in their sex, or, you know, these sex abuse cases. So there's 1,200. So this is how serious it is. And Bulawayo alone has more than 200 schools. So you can see the magnitude of this problem. And what we have said as a community in Bulawayo and as leadership is that we cannot just sit there and let this thing to continue and spread all over the whole body of Bulawayo. So we're putting children, and I'm thankful that schools are releasing children. We're expecting, you know, almost 2,000 or 3,000 school children to be part of the march.
That was Reverend Hussein Isbanda, one of the organizers of a march against teenage parties. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the continuing job cuts in the country. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios. Coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Africa's continuing development is a top priority for the United States. Africa is a place of incredible dynamism, some of the fastest-growing markets in the world, extraordinary people, extraordinary resilience, said President Barack Obama. It has the potential to be the next center of global economic growth. There is little doubt that increasing trade is one of the fastest ways to promote economic growth, boost development, and reduce poverty. That is why 15 years ago, the United States initiated and passed into law the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. It is a trade preference program that eliminates import tariffs on most goods from eligible countries into the United States, thus easing the way for African products to enter U.S. markets. However, nations interested in participating in AGOA must first meet certain criteria set by the United States, including supporting market-based economies and the rule of law and protecting human rights. Since its inception in the summer of 2000, AGOA has created economic opportunities by supporting regional integration, helping African companies become more competitive, and fostering an enabling environment for private sector investment. It has created some 350,000 direct jobs and hundreds of thousands of indirect jobs. Over the years, AGOA has become the cornerstone of the U.S.-African economic relationship and has expanded U.S. trade and investment with eligible sub-Saharan African countries. AGOA was due to expire in September 2015, but on July 25th, with strong backing from the administration, the U.S. Congress extended the program for another 10 years, and 4 days later, President Obama signed the extension into law. Now that it's been renewed, AGOA will be central to our efforts to boost the trade and investment that supports hundreds of thousands of jobs, both in Africa and the United States, creating opportunities for all of us, said President Obama. And I'm especially pleased that AGOA will continue to encourage good governance and labor and human rights. That's something that we can be proud of. This year's AGOA Forum will be held in Libreville, Gabon, on August 26th through 27th, with the theme AGOA at 15, charting a course towards a sustainable U.S.-Africa trade and investment partnership. It will be preceded by events organized by civil society, the private sector, and the African Women's Entrepreneurship Program. The U.S. government wants to create shared prosperity with sub-Saharan Africa. Our continued commitment to AGOA is a hallmark of this effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. Now to recap today's top stories. The Constitutional Court throws out an appeal by two former Zuba petroleum managers giving companies the green light to continue firing workers on notice. Three Zimbabweans are among 40 of the Mandela Washington Fellows who were awarded $25,000 entrepreneurship grants by the U.S. Africa Development Foundation. And a Wange Magistrate Court postpones the start of a trial for a hunter who helped an American dentist hunt and kill Cecil the Lion last month. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Standigile Mhlanga. This is Chris Gande in Washington wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night, Zimbabwe.